You're back with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Rick Jackson. There wasn't too much we regarded as funny in 2020. Not the COVID-19 lockdowns, restrictions, and death toll. Not the record-breaking Atlantic hurricane season. Not the killings of African Americans by police officers. Not the animosity of national elections and some local voting as well. So why do we think a comic strip about the year 2020 would bring any amusement to our lives? Well, fortunately, comics aren't my job. It is the job, though, of opinionated writer and producer of comics, Ron Hill. Ron was convinced he should lighten the mood by revisiting some of the political commentary that he made through the medium of the editorial cartoon, and to do so, he brought back an old favorite, B.B. Bluesbird. Hill created B.B. Bluesbird in 2004 as a newspaper comic strip feature, and thereafter he began to appear in Hill's paintings and personal comics and drawings, but the bird just lasted a couple of years until 2020 hit. Ron and B.B. are back now. His new book features every comic strip he put out in the horrific year of 2020 and another book for 2021. B.B. emerged as a voice, offering up opinions on everything from politics to social justice to climate change and, of course, the pandemic. B.B. Bluesbird's alter ego is here in Studio 5 today to talk about the medium of the editorial comic. Ron Hill, welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good to have you here. His most recent two books, one is called B.B. Bluesbird and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Year. It features every cartoon from 2020. The other is One Bird, Two Birds, Red Bird, Bluesbird, which does the same for 2021. Now, the year, Ron, 2020 didn't start off horrifically. When were you aware this was going to be one for the record books?
You know, I started writing B.B. Bluesbird in January of 2020. Thinking I just wanted to change up the regular thing I had been doing for 21 years. Yeah, what, 2 weeks before Governor DeWine shut things down on St. Patrick's Day, even before that, there's a couple of mentions of this thing COVID that is on the horizon. And probably by May or June, it was like, this is something that could be chronicled. It's kind of something we all have never gone through.
Yeah, you as a cartoonist for all these many years, you could see this coming. Was there kind of a trepidation? It's like, this is going to be a lot of death. And yet, as you said, it needs chronicling.
Yeah, it's something that nobody's been through this that is really alive today. Very few people, at least, back to the Spanish flu. And it just, it seemed like a perfect storm of a lot of things happening with the 2020 election coming up, finishing the first presidency of President Trump and going into 2020, and things were just going to be kind of crazy.
Kind of crazy just begins to describe it. In the first book, there is an aside that says, maybe I'll be voting in a pandemic. Clearly, you were among the many who never imagined we'd be where we are now. Were you ever afraid the material would get old or run out or repeat itself?
No, there's always new ways to say something. Mm-hmm. And to present something and to visualize something.
We don't think of the quartet of the Westlife, Solon Times, Geauga Times, and Chagrin Valley Times as cutting edge for speaking out. Were you ever censored or self-censored because of the audiences that you create for?
I think in 23 years, three times cartoons were killed. And I understood the reasoning. I always got an email or phone call from the publisher, like, why this isn't a good idea at this time, or so forth.
What were they? Do you recall?
The last was probably in 2016, the election going up. I could describe it. You could decide if you want to keep it in the interview or not. It was when LeBron James endorsed Hillary Clinton for the presidency, which was kind of unheard of for a celebrity to do that kind of thing. And the Cleveland Police Union endorsed Donald Trump. And it was right during the time when the big case was going on about the 100 or whatever shots into the police car at the time. And so I drew a cartoon of police chief and LeBron were both in it. And they were both holding a sign. One said Trump, one said Clinton. And the caption was, who has the highest shot percentage? And they called me up and said, you know, we had another issue with a thing recently where a cartoon I wrote froze out the local police station. This was in one of the Lorain papers. Mm-hmm. And for a newspaper not to have access to even the police blotter is kind of a big deal. So the publisher said, look, I can't do that right now. I get it, but And so I said, when's your press time? And he said, in 2 hours. So I came up with another one
in
2 hours.
Okay.
So
I was looking through the books, Roadwork, Geauga Lake, Karens, DE&I, First Energy, Recycling, Bernice Pike Park, Omicron and Delta. Is there anything that's sacred to a cartoon at some point where you go, I'm not going there?
In my writing creative process, not really. But there are times where the last story, case in point, where maybe sometimes I will vet, soften. I always want to make sure if I'm going after someone or trying to sting someone, that it's clear that I get the right person.
Do you have a sounding board, wife, family, somebody that you say, hey, take a look at this?
My wife is a great sounding board, and probably half the times I do listen, but then other times it's like, well, I feel strongly about this, and that action or policy enraged me. I want to see if I can get somebody else upset. Mm-hmm.
Going back to these books for 20 and 21, masks were a big theme of the year and of your work. Easy to do, though, when your protagonist has a beak the size of Twinsburg, right? So did your own opinion of the mask mandate, the mask rejection, the mask war prompt the work that you were trying to do, or did you just want to be a written observer?
No, my opinions and feelings are what's in the cartoons. I was a mask advocate. We got quite a few letters of people saying, always with the masks. Why always with the masks? And, you know, because the mask became a political trope, became a touch point for people. I think masks were important. Masks helped slow the spread, and I think that was proven. The mask comes back occasionally now in certain situations, but I think
mirrors life.
I think exactly. It's, I think now that, you know, the horse is out of the barn on that, we're not going to get the mask back, you know, as variants are rising, and masking is just a good idea, just another tool.
Yeah, so. You see it and then you don't see it. So I noticed a lot of your commentary, though, is done in lyrical style. You mock up songs from the Police to Brownsville Station and a couple of others. Why do that?
You really did read that.
I just did another
take on Please, Mr. Postman that ran this week. It was Please, Mr. Jordan, check and see. There's a subpoena in our bag for you. But it's like, it's just fun, just something to, you know, for myself.
They have to be songs where people know the lyrics, so your play works.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of offering the newer book as a play on what Theodore Geisel would have done came from where?
The first book is a take on Judith Vorst's not-so-well-known book, to Dr. Seuss at least, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. And a kind of parody, a lampoon, the cover illustration of that. Mm-hmm. And my partners at Act Three, the publishing company and media company that I'm involved with, they said in October, are you going to do 2021? I didn't know if I was going to do that.
Right.
And I said, I hadn't thought of it. That was an enormous amount of work to go back to write positioning captions for people that might not remember the context, to write reader response, things like that. And they said, no, I think you should. I think you should. So I started working on it. And again, sounding board, you mentioned, my wife, she said, well, you got to do something different. And it's like, for one thing, the economy limited the number of cartoons I published in 2021 versus 2020. Newspaper and media, as you know, is kind of struggling. So my wife said, you got to do something new. What would Dr. Seuss write? What in this style? And Dr. Seuss, I think, was influential on my artwork as a cartoonist, as an illustrator. I always loved the early books from when I was in grade school. So I wrote segue sections to introduce. In this book, we rearranged by topic a little bit. So I wrote kind of like in light verse and illustrated kind of monstrous, exaggerated, fantastical sort of pieces to go along with that.
I like the idea that the Lorax shows up too, because you have a lot of cartoons about the ecology.
Yeah, that's important to me. We said that these are all my opinions, my feelings. That's why they're on the op-ed page, something we have to explain to some readers a lot. But yeah, the ecology, global warming, I think these are serious issues that have, for one reason or another, and it's important, the pandemic was important to focus on, but I think any progress we started making on climate change has taken a back seat. So
you mentioned the idea that you grouped things by category rather than just chronologically. Here's January, here's December. I just flipped open the book just at random, and what I got here is a June 9th Rocky River Library cartoon, and then next to it, January 13th, a Westlife Little Diversity Library, big idea. So you really did come back to themes throughout the year. It's like, oh, that was a great idea, but it works now, not for the west side of Cleveland, but for the east.
Exactly. Yeah, for this book, it just made sense to group things by category.
Gary Dumm and Mike Polk Jr. did your forewords. How'd you get those guys? Well, Gary, Gary's a partner. But
it was, okay, yeah, on the two different books. Mm-hmm. I've known Gary for a long time, and I met him in person 15 years ago. And I had a BB Bluesbird graphic novel idea, and I had written 8 pages, and I showed it to him. And he said, "That's really cool." I said, "Yeah, I'm looking for some help on it." And he said, I'd be happy to help you draw it, ink it, whatever. And I said, no. I'm looking for a writer. Because Gary Dumm had done a lot of work with Harvey Pekar on a lot of his Americana blues and roots pieces that would get published in magazines like Music Maker, things like that. So Gary had a knowledge, a background about blues and the whole gestalt of what the blues mythos is. Plus, he's just a great all-around fun guy, and he took and added characters. And we published those for 2 years on an online comic. So Gary was a natural for the first BB Bluesbird collection to give some background to where this came from.
And then Mike Polk, we all know him as a comedian of talent.
Yeah, right. That was a suggestion from one of my partners at Act 3, because Act 3, we do media for different nonprofits and profit organizations. And we've done for a couple years work with the Literacy Cooperative, and Mike has done work with them.
Right.
So we got to know Mike through taping some and video, shooting some things. And so I just called him up and asked him.
So, Ron, what comes up next for you?
Well, I just continue work at Act 3, producing media, producing a graphic design. I'm kind of like the creative director, the visual guy. I'm still doing 2 editorial cartoons a week. Will there be a 2022 version? I don't know yet.
Can I say I hope so?
Okay. All right. We'll put that in the yes column. I'm also starting a documentary project on the fandom of Doc Savage.
Ooh, okay.
Have you heard of Doc Savage?
So, no, I don't know a lot about him. Go ahead and tell me who Doc Savage is.
Doc Savage was a pulp hero of the era of the 1930s and 40s. He was a companion magazine to The Shadow magazine, and a lot of people know The Shadow.
Right.
Doc Savage, many people feel, is the start of the superhero phenomenon. There were no superhero comics back then. So he's Clark Savage Jr. Well, Superman is named Clark. Doc Savage is the Man of Bronze. Superman was the Man of Steel.
Right.
Doc Savage had a Fortress of Solitude. Superman has a Fortress of Solitude. So it's just, it's a superhero from an era that is kind of slipping away. But there must be something there. I'm a lifelong fan. And James Patterson has a Doc Savage book coming out in October. So we think there's something there in this world of fandom.
I'd heard the name, didn't know much about it, but I'm a big Patterson fan, so okay, you got me. Ron, I want to thank you for coming in. It was a great, enjoyable book read. Folks can find them all over town. These books are cute, but at the same time, they're thoughtful. And we appreciate your time today and the work that you put in.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you, Rick.
That was my conversation with political cartoonist Ron Hill. He mentioned after the interview that he'll be giving some upcoming talks August 15th at Lakeside Chautauqua, which is near Sandusky, and at Picar Park Comic Book Festival in Cleveland Heights. That's on the 20th of August. Also got a last word email that came in from Dave saying that he uses Ron's EduTunes book in the Seminar on Education grad class, and he left us with this. The problem with political cartoons is sometimes they get elected. If you missed any portion of this program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. I'm Rick Jackson. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to 89.7 WKSU Kent, a public media service licensed to Kent State University and operated by IdeaStream Public Media. WKSU serves Northeast Ohio through HD and on WCPN Lorraine Cleveland 104.9, WKRW Worcester 89.3, WKRJ New Philadelphia 91.5, WKSV Thompson 89.1, and WNRK Norwalk 90.7.